Broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at Pod Bay 2A in the Alpha Centauri region. I am Mr. Michael Dean, the Iron Hamster. I'm talking to MK Lords, the Wolfram Panther, and Mr. Chandler St. Pierre, the Jabbering Coon Cat. How are you people?
Great.
Doing great.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm good. I just woke up from a nap, and I am caffo-loading. Nice. It's kind of like carbo-loading, but with caffeine and nicotine. So what's on y'all's mind? What's going on today? Give me a brief synapse preview of each of you. Go ahead, MK.
Well, I am off work today to celebrate Family Day in Canada. It's known as President's Day here, but we celebrate the Canadian version.
Are you Canadian?
I have some French-Canadian lineage. I'm not really, just kind of say that as an excuse not to celebrate President's Day, I guess. So we try to celebrate. It turns out a lot of Canadian holidays are on the same day as things like President's Day and, Veterans Day, things like that. So it's kind of like a joke where I work, we'll put up a sign saying we're closed for this official holiday, and it'll be like the Canadian version, or maybe not even the Canadian version, but just a separate holiday that happens to fall in the same time. So that's been fun. I've been hanging out with a friend who's in from out of town, William from the Free State Project. So that's been cool. It's been a good day.
Is that William K?
Yeah.
Yeah? Yeah, I know William K. Well, have I met him? Yeah, I met him. Met him at Porkfest, but I've been a fan of that guy. I've been a fan of that guy for a long time. He's the guy that, among other things, showed up at an Obama event a few years ago, open carrying a weapon. I remember that. And made national news. And I remember Don Lemon on CNN saying, and we go live now to an event where Obama is going to be speaking at a town hall meeting in New Hampshire to 7,000 people and one man with a gun. That's the quote I remember. He had permission from a church to be there on the church property. So Chandler, you, same question. What's up with you?
I had the day off, most of it as well. Spent it reading and doing some sound testing and sound conditioning. And then thawing frozen pipes and filling gaps in my foundation. Because winter is awesome.
Filling gaps in your foundation. Is that figurative or is that something with your house?
It's kind of figurative. And with my house, the foundation, there's in the basement, there's paneling up against it. And there's a small gap where a couple of the lines go outside. And I noticed a really, really cold breeze coming in there today. So I got some of that wonderful spray foam stuff and filled it all up. So everything's better now.
Yeah, people who don't own houses, people who rent, well, we don't own houses, we own mortgages. But people who own mortgages don't understand that kind of stuff because they just call their landlord and then hope it gets done. But yep. When you own a mortgage, you end up doing that kind of stuff.
Fun.
I take more pride in where I live now that I own a mortgage. You know,
I would agree with that.
You know, I'll get up and clean the leaves out of the gutter and be happy to do it. Not really happy, that's what I tell myself, but it's a lot more fun than if I were doing it on a rental where someone else owns the mortgage. So yeah, man. So William Kostrick, yeah, you know, he was He and his lady Antigone were in Wyoming a while back, and they were stranded. And do you know this story?
He actually told me that story tonight.
Tell me the story. Let's play telephone. I want to hear how it came through from one person to another person back to me.
Yeah, they were driving through Wyoming, and they broke down, and they were like, well, who do we know in Wyoming? And they were like, nobody but Michael W. Dean.
Exactly.
It was like, oh, well, he knows everyone who's in Wyoming. What, there's like 100 people there, right?
Yeah, so, basically.
he called you, and it just so happened they'd broken down near a friend's house. So one of your friends was able to come and pick them up, and yeah, it was pretty awesome.
Well,
breaking down in the middle of nowhere.
It was even more awesome and bizarre than that. It was, there are a 500,000 people in Wyoming, and I know almost none of them. And they weren't anywhere near me. They were like on the other side of the state. And one of the seven people I know in this state happens to live, he lives a mile from where they were and is a mechanic and drove to where they were and fixed their car and drove them, you know, had him follow over to his house and spent the night. And, you know, his wife and kids were out of town, so, you know, they didn't have to be quiet and sneak around or anything. It was late at night on what would have been a school night or something, but, you know, it was very fortuitous. I think my friend was kind of bored sitting around like, oh, I wish I had something to do, and he got a call from me.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was Anthony Bouchard, who runs the Wyoming Gun Owners Association, which is the only gun rights group that I'm, I don't even know if I'm a member anymore, but I send him, you know, $50 once a year, because they do some good stuff. I mean, they are part of the reason that you can conceal carry without a permit in this state. And it's one guy running the whole thing. He's pretty awesome.
That's impressive.
I don't get involved. Now, does that make me a bad ANCAP? Because I don't believe in becoming involved in the process, but I give $50 a year to one guy who actually makes a difference.
I mean, yeah, I think it's all right. I mean, diversity of tactics and all, you know. Maybe you're not going to be the one doing it, but you show, it's a show of support. It's a show of solidarity. Like, hey, you know, keep on keeping on. What you've done is effective, and here's how I show that I believe that.
The main reason I support him is probably not even so much that he actually gets bad laws repealed here, is that he makes life hell for politicians here. I'll give $50 a year to that. I mean, literally, he goes to, like, anytime there's a vote in the state house, he goes there with a video camera. And, you know, it doesn't get the number of hits that activism in New Hampshire gets, but he basically just gets a record on record of how everyone votes and what they say before they vote. So they can't as easily, like, run and campaign on, I love guns. Guns are great, which you have to do in Wyoming to be a politician. even Democrats do it.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Nice. You know, and then they're not necessarily like that when it comes to how they vote. Yeah. So, no, I mean, literally, that's what a gun culture that is here, that, like, a Democrat running for office will, like, borrow somebody's rifle and put on the hunting vest and have a picture taken. And actually, like, most Democrat politicians here probably hunt. You know, even the gun grabbers here are hunters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah. So we have a bizarre thing to read that people may or may not have heard about this. Do you want to? Who's going to read it? Who's going to read some of this?
I can take a stab at it.
How your TV is spying on you. You know, I used to say this to people, like, you know, I think the phone's tapped. Like, I used to say that in houses like 20 years ago, group houses, and people thought I was crazy, but I want an apology from those people. I want those people. They never will. Okay, so what's happening? I'm burying the lead here.
Yes, this is an article called Careful What You Say, Your Samsung TV Might Be Listening. And it goes on to say that Samsung has come under scrutiny from people that their new smart TVs are capable of listening to your conversations. So there's like a speech to text function of the television, and they're not disclosing who this third party is that's translating it, but they are saying don't say certain words if you don't want to, you know, be incriminated in something, like words like tax evasion and drug use. Don't say those things in front of your TV set, because it might pick it up, and who knows, that, you know, that could be a very bad thing.
That's what the article's saying. That's what the article's saying, but what does the actual end user agreement say that someone found?
Yeah, the privacy policy says, in addition, Samsung may collect and capture voice commands and associated text, so we can provide you with voice recognition features and evaluate and approve the features. So it captures the data, and they're saying, oh, well, we're collecting it to improve your user experience.
That's really creepy.
You know, now a lot of phones have this technology already. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, talk to text things already, but this is kind of interesting. It's in a television, and I know I've been pretty paranoid before and been like, oh yeah, you know, your computers are probably listening to you and your phones and whatever. And sometimes jokingly, sometimes not, But no, this is, you know, this is definitely creepy.
Well, Derek, you know, Jay, and I talked about
it to George Orwell.
Derek Jay and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago on the show, and you know, he was playing devil's advocate about how, well, this is just for advertising and marketing, the same as how they browse your internet habits. But I think it goes beyond that. And I know they're doing it, Microsoft is actually doing it with their Kinect console for the Xbox, which is one of the reasons I will never own one of those, even though I like the game.
Well, there's actually like that came out that last year that there was a really creepy feature of those, is that I guess you can do movie rentals through them, and it can count how many people are sitting in your room, like visually how many people are in the room watching a movie. And if there's more than six, they consider it a public, you know, like a theater presentation of it, and they charge you more for the rental.
Yeah. It's weird. And then it even says at the bottom of this, users who choose not to accept their TV's terms and conditions, you know, they're going to have to use a different television, and, you know, Samsung can, you know, maybe stop people from using the TV.
Well, the thing that worries me is this like a growing trend with LCD manufacturers? Are they all going to be smart TVs? Because I know I bought a widescreen LCD TV last year, and thankfully it was an older model and it wasn't a smart TV. But I've noticed going up to Sam's Club and Walmart and stuff, that's all you see now is the smart TVs. And I don't want one of those.
Well, they're doing
Other appliances too. My husband fixes appliances, and he's constantly seeing these new ones coming out, and a lot of them have this kind of smart technology sensing, you know, food temperatures, stuff that actually kind of sounds pretty useful, you know, in some ways. But yeah, that seems like the general progression of things.
Yeah, and it seems like if there is, you know, if this isn't just the end. End game of technology, like where it would go on itself without any kind of weird overlording. But if it is some kind of overlording, and I'm not convinced it entirely always is, I just think it can be used that way. You know, they won't require by law that you use these. They'll just phase the old ones out to where you can't get them anymore, pretty much, or that networks won't work with them. All right, we'll be back on the Freedom Beans.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Meow.
Right.
We is back.
Hello.
We're back. So, MK.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
Well, we were discussing this article, The Surprising Thing People Who Resist Authority Have in Common. And this kind of talks about the Milgram Experiment, which a lot of people might be familiar with, a lot of anti-authoritarians. And what are some of those things, Chandler? This is kind of an interesting article.
Well, this is found on MIC.com. And it starts off, consider this a lesson in disobedience. In 1961, Yale psychologist Stanley Milgram conducted a series of experiments looking at people's willingness to obey authority, even when doing so meant harming another human being. A new analysis of the controversial experiment suggests that the difference between blind obedience and disobedience may be less a question of morality and more a question of skill set. That is, how many tactics a person can try to assert him or herself in the face of authority. Matthew Hollander, a sociologist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, recently looked at the experiments in which 800 Americans were told to read a series of questions to a person they could not see. If the unseen person answered the questions incorrectly, the participants were instructed to electrocute them by flipping a switch. With each wrong answer, the voltage increased. Of course, no one was actually being electrocuted, despite being unaware that the unseen people were in fact actors and in no real danger from harm. 65% of people, the participants, continued to deliver potentially life-ending jolts of electricity simply because they were told to do so. I mean, think about that for a minute.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, they were doing this even while hearing screams and pleas to stop. So, this sounds cold, But according to Hollander, this new analysis published this month in the British Journal of Social Psychology, it may have little to do with conscience. People who challenge authority may simply have more ways of expressing themselves in order to get out of things that they don't want to do. Both people who followed the instructions and the few who refused to carry them out showed resistance, but those who successfully disobeyed, labeled heroes by Milgram, had a skill set for resisting authority figures, Hollander told. That kind of makes sense if you think about it. If you don't know how to express yourself and you're confronted with some sort of authority figure, it seems natural that you would have a more difficult time saying no, I don't think this is right. I don't feel comfortable doing this. You're just going to kind of go along to get along.
Right. And I'm wondering if it's a knowledge problem. Like, did these people not know that there were maybe these other alternatives? Or, you know, why were they limited in their expressions? Because the people tried a series of things. The people who resisted the most had about six or so resistant tactics, whereas the people who continued on, maybe they would, you know, have, you know, one or two before just kind of, you know, nervously moving forward. So a lot of people would have silence or hesitation, groaning or sighing, laughing nervously, challenging the authority figure, addressing the person being electrocuted on the other side, and then they would refuse. But yeah, it took a few different, kind of emotional reactions, kind of, you know, trying to process maybe the orders they were given. I'm wondering if this is like a teachable thing, or, you know, is this something that,
It's, it comes up a lot of like how, you know, the manifestations of mass hysteria and mass stupidity. I mean, the classic example is the Nazis. Like, how did most of a whole nation go along? And I mean, you know what a lot of people don't remember in history about the Nazis is the way that Hitler basically came to power was by promising to fix the economy and actually doing it. So, And I'm not saying that's good. I'm saying, like, beware of any politician who says, I'm going to fix what the other guys messed up, because, you know, they're probably not going to do it. And if they do, they might be worse than Hitler.
Well, something Davi said before, if you guys are probably familiar with this authoritarian sociopathy project. Yep. Well, he's said things in his presentations that the Eichmanns of the world are possibly more dangerous than the Hitlers of the world. And those are the people, you know, trains got to run on time kind of things. You know, I'm just following orders.
Yep. All right. We'll be back after this trip to the free market. Worms.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
So we've got a first time on air.
Yeah, man. We got a... So, Hugo, introduce yourself. First time, long-time listener, first time caller.
Yeah, that's right. My name is Hugo, and I'm calling from Old Mexico, the country. And I'm working on FiendPhone for Linux.
Yeah, you're...
So now I got it.
You're calling in on FiendPhone for Linux, using virtualization software, right? Yeah, so...
That's right, yeah.
all those people who say, make Fiend phone for Linux. Yeah, this is history. Like, he's calling in on a headset. I normally wouldn't have someone on a headset, but it's what he had handy. Sounds he's at his job. And it's a first, not only because he's using Linux. I mean, it's not running. Fiendphone doesn't exist for Linux yet. Hugo's working on that, but he's running it in virtualization software on Linux the same way that we had two different tutorials for Macintosh for Apple recently. And it sounds pretty good, man. So tell me more.
So I'm curious, Hugo, how long have you been able to run Fiendphone like consecutively in virtualization?
Well,
3 minutes.
I've done it for, yeah, probably 3 minutes. It died on me a few minutes ago, but you know, it's a work in progress. But yeah, I managed to run Windows inside Linux and Fiendphone inside Windows.
Yeah,
so yeah. You can do all kind of interesting stuff with it. You can pipe audio between the applications, and you can record. That's what I was looking for. Using it with Linux, because I do things with Linux.
Yeah. So, do you find that a lot of people that are developing software use like VMware and VirtualBox to help build and develop their software?
Well, it is way easier, and yes, totally. And you can even do it on the cloud, so you can put a server up there, and then develop something, get a very big machine, test it over there, and see it on your own PC. So yes, it is. It is useful. I've been doing it with when I want to do something with Windows, I do it with a virtual machine, and it's a way to go.
Cool. Can you is there any way to move the microphone about an inch further away from your mouth? I know you're on a headset, and this is a teaching totally, hospital. Yeah. Cool, because it's getting me a lot of like sibilance on your S's. It's pretty cool, man. It's not only a first of having Fiendphone working virtual in Linux. It's also the first time we've had four callers on Fiendphone on a live radio show. We've tested it before, but not broadcasting, and it's pretty cool. And that's the kind of show this is too. Like, most people be like, well, we can't do that on the radio, but I'm like, during the break, I'm IMing you like, yeah, man, here's the IP, just jump on.
Yeah, the Fiends are brave.
Yeah.
With technology.
Yeah, the Fiends are brave. And I gotta say, like, you know, you, it sounds like you're on a headset, but you still sound better than most like callers on radio shows.
Yeah, I was going to say
probably
that.
Probably better than. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Probably yeah, it's not that scratchy.
On Skype, probably better than Skype using even a good microphone.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to say.
Mm-hmm.
And we can all talk at the same time.
trailblazing yeah. the roads of radio with technology.
That's
yep.
right.
Yep. So you do a radio or you do a podcast in Mexico City, an ANCAP libertarian podcast. What is it called, Hugo? And tell us a little about it and where people can find it.
I do. I can. I will say it in Spanish. It's Radio Barra Libre, which means loosely open bar radio, because it's a call-in show. I do it on online, on internet radio, so people can Skype in and pretty soon they'll be able to Fiendphone in.
Cool.
And you can find it at libertarios.info. So it's like libertarian, but with an O at the end. And okay. There you can find a lot of shows. I put it out as a podcast after I take the calls and I do everything. I try and make it a bit like the Fiends. And so I try not to talk about the current news, but, you know, maybe I'll take that hook of a current event and then bring it from there and talk about, you know, universal truths.
Cool, man.
Nice. How long have you been doing the show?
It's been on for a little less than a year. That one call-in show. I've been podcasting for 3 years now.
Is there a big demand and curiosity about libertarianism in Mexico?
Well, I can say from the podcast, when it started, it was getting about 100 downloads, and now I'm up to 800. So I think it's been...
All right.
We brought up ANCAPs from under the rocks in Mexico using the podcast. So, yeah. Yeah, they've been coming out.
Excellent.
It's, yeah. Yeah, I would...
Mm-hmm. I'm working on getting you guys on radio. It's a long, slow process, but I'm hoping it'll happen. It'd be a great way to spread liberty in America and elsewhere. I don't know about other countries if they would put a libertarian show in Spanish on the air, but I know that they'll put straight up, you know, Free Talk Live and the Freedom Fiends are proof that there are stations here that will take true liberty programming. And there are probably, you know, 600 or 800 Spanish language only radio stations in America that would never touch Free Talk Live or the Freedom Fiends. So I'm hoping that we can sneak some liberty in the back door there on by trying to get you guys syndicated and get you on Spanish language radio in America and elsewhere.
Yeah, you've been helping us with that, and I think the demographics and the listeners are there. It's you know, millions of people speaking Spanish and a bunch of other people who are learning Spanish, and it's a good thing to practice, you know, listening about liberty in Spanish on the radio or on the internet, maybe.
Yeah, and it's a really...
Well, liberty is a universal language.
That is true. That is correct. Yeah, we find it, it's a different tradition here in Mexico, but still, we got, you probably listened to what Jeff Berwick's saying with Acapulco, and the thing here is we don't talk about liberty much, and, you know, but politicians don't talk about liberty that much. But it's like Soviet Russia. Everyone knows where the lies are. So we try to, you know, some laws are really optional here. So that's where the liberty sneaks in.
You know,
I imagine there's a lot of resistance, you know, even if there's not as much rhetoric about it.
You know,
there's a lot of...
Oh, go ahead,
Mexicans
Andrew.
Do
go
a lot of agorism. If they don't know the word, they do the, you know, the... working outside the rules of the system, some, you know, people trading freely and not telling anyone about it.
Are there a lot of anarcho-communists in Mexico, or is it mostly anarcho-capitalists?
I would say there are more anarcho-communists in universities, and there's a very very old tradition here of anarchists and, you know, communists, and but that's a small group. It's not growing at all.
Because I saw the
growing every day.
I looked at the Anarchapuco face beef page the other day, and there were almost all the comments were like negative comments from anarcho communists, like saying anarcho capitalism isn't real anarchism. Like it's kind of funny how adamant ANCOMs, those filthy socialists, are about defending the property. Of like they don't believe in property, but they believe in property rights of the name anarchism, it seems like. Did you notice that? Did you see that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's probably worse. They believe in intellectual property over the name anarchism. And there's a very vocal minority of anarchists in public universities. You know, the usual ones that are communists, but they don't want to be the statist communists.
Yeah.
So they try to fix it and make it sound okay, but... Yeah, we're growing and they're not.
Yeah. Well, communism makes sense for people who don't have to work for a living. And that's a lot of people who are in universities. You know, they're not working a job. They're being, you know, their food and board and education is being paid for by the state or by, you know, their families. And so it's very easy for them to say all wealth should be redistributed because they don't have any wealth. You know, there aren't that many rich communists in the world. There's probably a few in China, but other than that, you know, people who are rich tend to not be communist, and it makes sense.
Yeah, in China, they have to pull the party line and say they're communist, even though they're probably capitalists.
Yeah,
and, you know, closeted capitalists.
Yeah.
And there's ANCOMs don't know about many of, well, the ANCOMs that are in the university, they don't know about many of the problems we feel are important, like taxes. So they've never worked, so they've never been taxed.
Well, they don't pay taxes, and they are actually the recipient of taxes for most of their living.
It would be for it then.
Yeah. So how is Mexico? And you travel to America frequently, or you have, right? You have family in Florida, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, a couple times in the last year, so yeah.
Yeah, so actually, we just got added on another radio station in Florida, in Pensacola. We started there this weekend. Yeah. I was awake listening to it. MK was asleep, but Tim was awake. Tim heard it. Yeah. So awesome. How compare a little bit freedoms in America and Mexico. I mean, I know that there's no free country anywhere, and in some ways they're all getting worse and they're all getting better at the same time. But, you know, I think what it is, like Cody Wilson said it really well. We were interviewing one time on here, and I said, you know, what do you think is the future of freedom? And he basically said, I'm paraphrasing, but the idea was something that, like, he thinks overall the idea of people giving legitimacy to the state is dying more and more all over the world, and it's going to continue to do that. But over time, in the meantime, there will be just occasional, just brutal examples of the state clamping down on individuals here and there. So tell me about Mexico versus America.
I think that's true. I think that's true. People are identifying the lack of freedom also here in Mexico, in everywhere else. I would say Mexicans tend to disregard the law a bit more wherever that's maybe where it's more visible.
Like they, you know, here in America, like a lot of people who don't have any kind of political you know, belief or understanding, and they think the police are your friends. They pride themselves on, I'm a law abiding, tax paying American. Do you have that in Mexico?
Not really. We have, there's a very old tradition of mistrusting the police.
Yeah.
Mistrusting the police here in Mexico. So a Mexican would never ask a policeman for directions.
And really?
That used to be a thing. Yeah.
Even like a normal family, like, you know, not criminal type, like a normal, you know, regular person wouldn't ask the police for directions.
Yeah, they wouldn't do that.
All right. We'll be back.
Nothing good can come from it.
We'll be back.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
I'm sounding all right.
1 o'clock in the morning here.
Yep,
we're coming on into the next segment.
Yeah, we got a few minutes.
Going to radio.
Yeah, man. How long can you stay on, Hugo? I'm recording, by the way, on the break.
I can stay for as long as you guys want me to stay.
Why don't you stay for the rest of the show?
Cool. Awesome. Yeah. Okay.
Or until you crash and reconnect. Yeah. Cool, man.
This is great.
Yeah.
History.
It is history.
Yeah, history is being made right now.
Yep. So what do you guys want to talk about? Oh, you guys want to talk about this license I came up with, huh? When we get back.
Oh, yeah. This beastly internet policy
committee. I just want to say that on the air. I love it.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, it's great.
Let me check the thing about the license.
Oh, let me
so
send,
can I just introduce? Can I just introduce it, and somebody else will read it?
Yeah, yeah. All right, sure. I'm sending it to Hugo. Do you have it up there, MK? Bipcock.
Yeah.
Bipcot.org.
Yeah. Bipcot.
Bipcock.
Yeah.
Bipcot.org.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. I read about that.
Yep. That's gonna be the license on Fiendphone, so starting with the next version. But I've changed it on the Fiendphone website. So, yeah. I'll bring it back and introduce it and then throw to MK and she can read. So go down the page to where the license actually starts, where it says begin license.
Okay, yeah.
MK, so MK is going to read it. Yeah, starting with begin
license. I know Chandler wanted to say it though, so he wants to say the beast lick part.
Yeah. I'll throw it to him for that.
Okay.
I don't want to take that away from him.
I'm kind of glad things worked out the way they did today and I rearranged the office. It's a much less cluttered setup and I like it better. I'm actually much more comfortable.
Good.
Yeah, moving the mic.
I always feel better.
So does anyone still use Pigeon? I have it up during the show, but
I used it today. Hey, Hugo.
I haven't used it in months.
Hugo. Hugo, are you Facebook friends with a guy named...
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Yeah. James talking from Pod Bay 2A, somewhere in the Alpha Centauri region. And we are doing a first here. We are doing two firsts. One is this is the first ever four-way conversation on Fiend Phone live on air. Everyone want to chime in? This is Michael Dean. Chandler, go ahead. You there?
This is Chandler from Maine, and I am privileged to be part of history.
Yep, and MK?
Yeah, this is MK in Florida, and yeah, I'm making history right now. It's happening.
And Hugo. Happening. Hugo in Mexico City.
This is Hugo calling from Mexico City, or from old Mexico, making history with the Fiends.
Yep, and the other history we're making is that Hugo's on Linux right now. He's running Fiend Phone with virtualization software on Linux, and it's actually working. So all those people who say, make Fiend Phone run for Linux. So far, it works for it works virtualized on Mac and Linux. Now, you're working on making a version of it for Linux. Is that accurate, Hugo?
Yes, that's true. I'm trying to get it. Actually, making it for Linux would be one of the first steps would be to make it cross-platform, so it will help for Mac users too.
Yeah.
So yes.
Yeah, because don't both platforms use the Unix code?
Yeah, they use a lot of the same interfaces, a lot of the same codes, but actually changing some of the parts of Fiend Phone for a different toolkit will help run it on any platform.
Awesome.
Right now, it's very Windows specific.
Yeah, excellent, man. So we haven't had a good discussion about open source licensing on here for a while. And the last time I was having discussions like this about a month ago, it was me practically like yelling at the air, going because everyone kept telling me make Fiend Phone for this, make Fiend Phone for that, and like we're closer than ever. And you know, the bottom line of that whole like week long rant of mine was that, you know, when things are open source, you shouldn't complain if it's not available in your flavor, because it's open source. You can go ahead and make it in that, or somebody will eventually, and somebody be. So, but I actually came up with something the other day. It's a new open source license, and we're going to release, Fiend Phone is now under this license. It's going to be in the program in the next update. I think we're going to do a tiny update of just fixing a couple little things here and there, not a whole overhaul. Just kind of a between versions beta update soon, so we can have Derek Slopey's going to do that, so we can add this license in. But the license is on the website now. So Chandler wants to read the name of the company because he likes saying it, that Derek and I have. What is it?
Okay, so from the Beastlick Internet Policy Commission outreach team, home of the BIPCOT NoGov open source license, we have.
And you can go to BIPCOT.org. That's let's see, Bravo India Papa BIP COT Charlie Oscar Tango BIPCOT.org. This website just went up today. It's going to be the home in perpetuity for this license. It's a very simple site. There's like the license information's on the front page, and then there's like, you know, mission, team, software, and donate pages that all just have a few words on each one. You know, this is not going to be a blog. We're not going to keep adding to this. It's going to be just what you see now, pretty much. We'll probably, when other programs besides Fiend Phone adopt this license, we'll probably add a list of them on there we'll add a page for that. But MK, do you want to go ahead and read the BIPCOT NoGov open source license, please? Now, let me explain. It's an adaptation of the Berkeley software distribution, the BSD three clause license, which is used for a lot of Linux things, but it adds four clauses that basically say governments cannot use this software. And that was we'll do when we come back from the break. It was basically inspired by me watching Obama on TV the other day taking credit for the internet and talking about how without the government, computers wouldn't be marvelous. And I think without the government, computers would be far more marvelous than they are now even. So we'll be back after this trip to the market and some national and international news that'll probably scare the heck out of you. And then we'll come back and make you feel better on the Freedom Fiends by soothing the hamster in your brain. Worms. We'll be right back.
$5 to download, so they would be aware that they were not contributing to the development.
I'm recording.
It was okay, but it just got blown out of proportion.
Aww.
And people got, I don't think there was a point, but when the guy said it was a Marxist thing, I was like, you really don't know what you're talking about.
Hey, hang on, hang on a sec. Right. I want to do a sound check thing. Somebody has like a humming noise. So one at a time, one at a time, I'm going to have you mute your mic by clicking on the mic and getting the red arrow. So MK, you go first.
All right.
It's not you. Come on back. Come on back.
Okay, I'm back.
Okay, Hugo, go ahead.
Okay.
It's not you. Come on back. Chandler, it's you.
Okay.
You there, Chandler? I'll just turn Chandler down and see if it goes away. Yeah, it's Chandler.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I just turned him down and
I spent like an hour today doing sound testing with him.
Oh, yeah.
It's probably like whatever he's using to keep from freezing to death.
Hmm.
How's the weather there?
Where is he in the world?
He's in Maine. How's the weather, Hugo, in Mexico?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Actually, it's pretty chilly in the office, but yeah, you know, Mexico chilly.
Yeah, like 50 degrees.
I don't know. Like, I don't know. In
Fahrenheit?
I'll let you know. Like,
you're going on Google and trans.
I'm converting. Yeah. I'm converting because I don't know what that is. 60 right. degrees.
I don't know what that is. 60 degrees
yeah,
is 60 cool.
Yeah, 60 degrees is cold for Florida, too. It was like 60 degrees outside today. I'll put on a light jacket.
Yeah.
I have no tolerance for the cold.
Yeah, Hugo, go ahead.
I remember when you interviewed this guy, the open source guy, a libertarian one, and I was listening to our Linux podcast, so it looks to me like most free software people are either commies or libertarians.
Yeah.
There's not much in between.
There's really not. I mean, even you're talking about Eric S. Raymond, right?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, that's the one. Yeah, I mean, Eric S. Raymond is basically there's three people that are directly responsible for Linux. I mean, there's thousands of people, but for the initial making it happen, it was Eric S. Raymond, Linus Torvalds, and Richard Stallman. Mm-hmm. Stallman is an actual communist. I mean, like, isn't he? Doesn't he say he's a communist or a socialist?
I think so.
He says he's a socialist, yeah.
Yeah. And Eric S. Raymond is an anarcho-capitalist gun nut like us. And let me speak for myself. And Linus Torvalds is, you know, he's a Scandinavian, like everyone in Scandinavia. Like, well, you know, like he doesn't identify as a socialist, but he's like, of course there should be universal health care, like that kind of guy. And like, you know, he's like, well, of course I fired a weapon. I was in the army. Everyone in my country has to join the army, but I'd never own a weapon, you know, like that kind of thing. So.
Yeah. Linus. The least political of them is Linus, but still.
You said he's the least political of the three?
Yeah, of the three.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish I'd had Fiendphone for Linux to do that interview with Eric S. Raymond. He did it over the telephone. It didn't sound very good.
Hmm.
Was he refusing to run proprietary software?
No. I mean, you know, he probably would have done, you know, I don't know. He might have done Skype on Linux, but he only uses Linux. Chandler, you back?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a hum that we're getting from your side that we're all hearing. It sounds like a rotating disc, really quiet and low. Do you hear it in your room there?
If it's anything, it's that computer. I'll have to shut it off and just talk.
It's what computer?
It's my Mac that I have all my browsers and email open on.
Try this. Is it a laptop?
No, it's a Big Mac Pro.
Okay. Try this. Take your mic off the stand and point it at it, like close to it. Let me see if it gets louder.
Okay.
Is it pointing towards it? It got quieter. So it's something else in the other part of the room.
That's the only thing that's on in this.
There's room. No heater on. It sounds like it has the sonic quality of like a sound that's coming through the floor kind of thing, you know?
I don't know what to tell you. Nothing else is on in the room.
Does everyone else hears it though, right?
Yeah.
Okay. MK, you hear it, right?
Yeah, it's a little better now. It's a little fainter.
Yeah, it
now,
is.
But,
all right, we're back in 15 seconds.
Not terrible.
I'm going to recap since there's a couple stations that join us at this hour. Engage with other listeners, ask questions, start debates. Don't agree with the host? Let them know. Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. I've been working with computer programmer Derek Slopey to create Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about FiendPhone.
FiendPhone is free, open-source software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try the Windows beta version of FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to fiendphone.com and join the conversation, because if you don't, you'll set liberty back 2,500 years.
That's fiendphone.com, FENPHONE.com. Foxtrot, echo, November, phone.com.
Fiendphone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Broadcasting from the center of your locus aurelius in the middle of your brain, from Pod Bay 2A at Intergalactic Prairie Studios, a mile above sea level. And we're doing some interesting things here. We're doing a four-way call on Fiend Phone. We've never done that before. We have myself, we have MK Lords, we have Chandler St. Pierre, and we have Hugo. How do you say your last name, Hugo?
It's Gonzalez.
Oh, okay. That's, I can say Gonzalez. Yep.
Gonzalez. Yeah.
Yep. And there is a weird hum in the background, but it's space aliens landing outside of Chandler's house. So we've determined it's on his channel. We don't know what it is. We can't do anything about it. It just happens. And this is a teaching hospital, so we point things out rather than hiding them like other shows do, because we try to improve things. But we're doing something else unique here, and I'm recapping what we did in the last hour, because we add like three stations for the second hour on the nighttime shows. And we're actually running FiendPhone, which is this software that was invented by myself and Derek Slopey. He's the programmer, I'm the designer. We did it together. It's a group effort. And we're bringing it. Someone's coming in on Linux here. We got it's Windows only, but Hugo is using virtualization software to speak over Linux. And I wanted to talk a little bit about open source licensing, because we actually we did put this out as BSD 3 clause open source license, but we've decided to change that, and we can do that because, you know, it's our software and we're putting it out and we can do whatever we want with it. Also, it's still in beta, so it's not even officially released yet. So you know, by the time it's officially released, it'll be better and have this wonderful new bipcot.org. If you want to go to bipcot.org, you can read about the open source license. And basically, this license almost pretty much says that anybody can do anything they want with this. They can redo it, they can make it, they can make other things out of it for free, you know, if they just credit us in the text somewhere. But the governments are not allowed to use it. And this is a first for open source licenses. And the thing that inspired me to do this, I mean, we're kind of joking before. Like I said, I wanted to create this software before we even had a name for it. It was like, I want something better than Skype to make Liberty podcasts and radio sound better. And we need to come up with something. So, you know, I willed this thing into being, basically raised a little money, paid Derek, and it came to be, and we joked about like doing something that's just basically impossible, which is like adding a feature in it that would detect speech praising the state, you know, state speech is hate speech plugin, that would like make it uninstall if you're praising the state over it, and that it could only be used for liberty and talking about freedom and liberty and, you know, government so small that it's theorized about by particle physicists. And it just hit me the other day. There's a way to actually do that, which is put it in the license. And of course, governments can ignore licenses. But what inspired this was I was channel flipping the other day. I don't watch much TV, but I turned on TV and I was channel flipping. I was watching Obama giving this, and he is a liar and he's a socialist and his feet stink. And I was watching him give a speech to a bunch of Silicon Valley company owners and, you know, praising them and kissing their butt and at the same time, like, taking credit for the internet, basically, you know, kind of like worse than Al Gore did, like saying, without government, there'd be no internet. We'd all be pushing berries up our nose, talking over tin cans. That. Yeah, he built that. He's basically saying he built that and crying for more government intervention to protect everyone and stimulate and stop hackers and stimulate, you know, growth in the tech sector. And like, the best thing any government could do to stimulate growth in any sector is get out of the way. And right now there's this whole push to basically, like, you know, the government had a tiny bit to do with the creation of the internet early on, and then the private sector just ran wild with it and built it into what it is today. And the governments of the world are trying to, like, you know, put the cow back in the barn after it's out now, and they're trying to, like, push all these things that are basically going to end freedom, and they're saying they're doing it to increase freedom, like governments always do. So that's what inspired this license. So if you want to read along, you can go to bipcot.org and look at the license. But MK, would you read the BIPCOT No Government License? And BIPCOT stands for Beastlick Internet Policy Commission Outreach Team, which is the name of Derek and I's software company, Derek Slopey and I's software company. And Beastlick is our imaginary name for where I live in Wyoming. It basically means, you know, bum F Egypt. Our version of that is Beastlick, Wyoming. So can you go ahead and read it, please, MK?
Yeah, so this is the BIPCOT NoGov License version 1. So this is for FiendPhone. The original computer code and resulting program, copyright, and then company and programmers in the year. You insert all of this, and then your URL, all rights reserved. Redistribution and use in source and binary forms with or without modification are permitted, provided that the following conditions are met. 1. Redistributions of source code must retain the above copyright notice, this list of conditions, and the following disclaimer. 2. Redistributions in binary form must reproduce the above copyright notice, this list of conditions, and the following disclaimer in the documentation and or other materials provided with the distribution. 3. Neither the name of the copyright holder nor the names of its contributors may be used to endorse or promote products derived from the software without specific written prior permission. Blah. 4. Governments and agents and subcontractors of same are not permitted to use the software or derivations of this software. 5. If governments, agents, and subcontractors of same use the software or derivations of this software, all agencies and persons directly and knowingly involved may be shamed in public, by name, on the internet, on radio, and in any media now extant or invented in the future, throughout the known universe, and elsewhere, in perpetuity. Governments, agents, and subcontractors of same that use this software or derivations of this software agree to endure this shaming without comment or action. I love that one. That's my favorite one.
I was really pleased with, like, how I worded that. It just kind of, I thought about it for a minute, it just came to me. Without comment or action. Like, not only can you not sue us, you can't even mention it.
You just have,
like,
to endure,
like,
it.
I'm putting in a social contract, basically, that if a government employee violates it, they give up their right to get the last word. Like, we automatically get the last word is what that means. So go on.
There you go. So 6, any person or entity that violates any part of this agreement will also be shamed as above and agrees to endure the shaming without comment or action. And then 7, the BIPCOT NoGov license uses the first 3 clauses of the 3-clause BSD license, which is the Berkeley Software Distribution License, and the BSD as is text at the end. The 3-clause BSD license is in the public domain. However, there is no partnership or endorsement created or implied between the creators or users of the BIPCOT NoGov license and the BSD license, or vice versa.
Yeah. Yep. So, thank you. Hugo, you got comments?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it reminded me of our very own security letter for the government violators of the FiendPhone software. You know, you can't talk about it, so they'll be pretty soon they'll be doing their own war on canaries.
Yeah. They'll say the government will say, I've been contacted by the free market.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's this may have been some way, tiny way, been inspired by that ridiculous thing that some people put in their sig line, including one of the fiends, at least that sig line thing of like, basically it's a bunch of legalese that is completely unenforceable that says that, you know, if the NSA spies on this, they're violating the Constitution or something. You guys have seen that.
Yeah.
Right?
I was going to say that same thing. I was going to, say it doesn't really protect you, but, I've seen it used a lot.
Yeah. And I don't know that this would really protect us, but, it's kind of an interesting thing to put in a license. I've never seen anything put in and you know, then there's the irony of like a legal document that excludes the government that contains copyright that, so it's basically like attempting to use the government to like stop the government from doing anything. And I'm not going to say I would never use any legal guns of the government against the government. Like, I don't really think I have a moral problem with that. I just think it would be ridiculous, which is why I put in this, the idea of shame as the punishment for violations. But there is actually, Daryl Perry brought up, and I thought about this before he brought it up, but, you know, he was like, well, could you write this without the copyright notice? And I was like, well, give it a shot. And he wrote a version of it without the copyright part that's all shame-based. And that's nice. That's on this website below that. It's pretty much the same thing, but just changes copyright owner to, you know, creator of software and things like that. So if you,
yeah, we kind of did a similar thing with Bitcoin Not Bombs and the bit license. It was really meant to be a joke, kind of making
fun of the intergalactic bit license.
The intergalactic bit license, yes, because there's a bit license coming out of, you proposed, that's supposed to be coming out of New York that would regulate Bitcoin exchanges, and we jumped ahead of them. We were like, no, we're going to issue the intergalactic bit license so that you're covered on all planets all the time. Obviously just a joke, but yeah, we've had some fun with that. We're still issuing the licenses. You get like a nice little laminated card. You just fill out a little application and you send you a laminated card with your Bitcoin address on it.
Yeah. We actually considered, Derek Slopey and I actually considered, putting something in FiendPhone that would require entering an actual working intergalactic bit license to access some advanced functions of it. But, you know, it's slow. The adoption of this is slow enough anyway that we don't want to cripple it. But I actually do believe, though, and I've run it by a couple attorneys, that this BIPCOT no government license is actually a legally enforceable license. You know, it's a legitimate, quote unquote, in the realm of open source licenses. It is an operational and legitimate license. The part about shaming, you know, I don't know what recourse there would be other than shaming. And, you know, I don't know that it would actually protect us. It's not saying that, you know, it's not saying that we will dox anybody. It's not saying that we will slander anybody. It's saying that we will shame people, you know, and that's legal speech, supposedly, still. So I hope people adopt this, and we're going to start using it with the next rollout of FiendPhone. So Hugo, final comments before we go to the break here?
Yeah, I think copyright is pretty much dead anyway. If you come into with a business plan that includes having your copyright and having it enforced, you probably won't get any money. Yeah. So shaming is the only thing we get.
We're not getting any money anyway. Barely. FiendPhone. I've lost money and Derek's made a tiny bit. So donate. Go to fiendphone.com. We'll be back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Here we go.
905 My TV.
Freedom Fiends. Improving audio on the fly since 2011. So, Chandler, you there?
I am.
Yeah. So we solved the hum. It was your mic was on a mic stand clamped to a table. The table had the computer on it, and it was picking up the sound of the hard drives of the fan from the laptop conducting through the table, through the scissor arm mic stand into the mic. And now you're holding it handheld, right?
Yes.
Okay. And we talk about this stuff because this is a teaching hospital and we want to teach people how to improve audio. I could tell from the sound of it that it was a spinning something, you know, some spinning lodestone, like a computer hard drive. So you weren't on that whole last segment. You got sent to the corner for bad audio. You're back now. Why don't you weigh in a little bit on this whole it's not an anti-government license. It's a no government license. So what are your comments on that there, Chandler?
Well, I think it's interesting. You said that even though it is legally enforceable, you know, governments can disobey and disregard that.
Yeah.
But I think the license serves a good purpose in educating people and getting people to yes. ask questions like, why would they put this in a software license, you know? Mm-hmm. So it makes people ask questions, and I think that's really important. And I think that'll actually further help the adoption of FiendPhone because it's so unique.
Yeah, and you know, that's when I was in bands back in the day, like all the punk rock bands and all the people in that kind of scene, whether they were punk rock or not, like everybody hated major labels and were like, I'd never sign to a major label, man, that's selling out. And I never actually said that. And I got signed to a major label. So I didn't have to people said I had no integrity because I signed to a major label, but I never had to eat my words, you know, like libertarians who say I'd never use the government guns. And then they use the government guns when the going gets tough. And we're not saying we're going to use government guns. I'm not going to come out and say I'd never use government guns on the government if they violated this contract but because if I do, that's saying it's not legally enforceable. I'm just going to say, la da 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 da. I don't want to talk about it, but I'm saying nod, nod, wink, wink, you know me. So I've dealt with this whole thing before back in the day of like people loudly saying one thing and then doing another. And the thing was like most of the punk bands that said they'd never signed a major label would never have been invited to anyway. But this is kind of a different deal. Like this is real integrity to me, is saying, you know, whenever possible, you won't do business with the government. And the thing is, I've seen there's a lot of software companies that want to do business with the government. Like that's a goal. You know, that was one of the reasons that I got really disgusted with the whole Namecoin team. Was Namecoin was like they were trying to get like grants from Google and like things backed by like encouraged by the government, you know, like, okay, so you're making this software that's for circumventing the government and then you want to get in bed with the government. Like they were actually considering getting ICANN, you know, ICANN, the people who control the government agency, the government controlled agency that controls all the domain registrations, except .bit, you know, Namecoin. They were trying to get that to like accept .bit as one of the domains. And I'm like, that's like saying, okay, we found this like encryption software. We want to like give the government the keys to it. It's basically saying that. And I think that is, I don't know if it's lacking integrity, but it's lacking vision. I'll say that for sure. So,
yeah, I think a lot of people have a hard time thinking of how things could be outside of the current system that we have. So a lot of people are saying, oh, we need things like when you're talking about with Namecoin or also in the Bitcoin space, we need regulation because it will bring mass adoption. And the reason more people aren't signing on is because of this thing called regulatory uncertainty. Like we don't know what the laws are going to be, so we just don't know what to do. And I don't know that that's as much of a thing as a lot of the businesses make it out to be. You know, I think there are a lot of other reasons why Bitcoin adoption isn't taking off, and to assume
it
that
is taking
it's
off,
because
though.
There's not enough regulation. Right. Well, it is taking off too. Yeah. So
I bought a computer today with Bitcoin, by the way.
Oh, nice. Yeah. There you go. I mean, and
where did
there's
you get
a
it,
poll
Michael?
Too, like 8%.
We've talked about this is related also to the FiendPhone thing. We've talked about, we bought this server and, so we bought this server and spent like $300 on it and then spent like $100 getting it, or like $200 getting it, you know, like adding hard drives and adding an operating system. And then, you know, Derek spent about 20 hours probably configuring it and getting it to work right. And we finally found out when we were done with it that it's like, it's too loud to install at GCN. Like we talked to GCN about it and they're like, it won't work. So if anybody wants to buy a Dell PowerEdge server cheap. We got one for sale. But I went and bought a smaller, just like desktop computer that'll work fine. It was like $120 on Amazon. And I went through gifts.com, GYFT.com, and nice. Used Bitcoin to buy an Amazon card to buy it.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
I'm recording. What are you talking about?
BitNation.
BitNation.
What do they do?
Well, they are. They say governance. So
I hate that word.
So that's to be expected. You know, it's a non dirty word for government. People are starting using that. Yeah. Governance, like,
well,
it's different.
also a word for not NGOs, non government organizations, like the UN.
Right,
is a non government, you know, and everything connected with the UN is an NGO, but they have influence on government. So NGO, you know, it's kind of funny. Like NGO is one of the options on Facebook, and a lot of anarchists pick that, and they don't know what it means unless they're being ironic.
That's what I was going to say. On my other page, I have I have it listed as an NGO.
Yeah, I think a lot of people that use it don't know what it means, though. I think they think it means anti, you know, like something good.
Yeah.
Because it's really not that common of a word for people to understand, or a phrase.
I'm seeing here the services that the guys at BitNation are saying they would provide. And there's social services and security and diplomacy. And well, something else, packages, but I'm pretty sure they've talked about having IDs and reputations and non-anonymous reputations. So, you know, having driver's license or a national ID through the blockchain, which sounds to me like the worst of both worlds.
Yeah, right. That was one of my criticisms. And I mean, these are people who, I mean, they didn't have a white paper ready by the time of their crowd sale. They didn't have anything together. They didn't have a multi-sig address put together. And she was out promoting it, saying that they did.
Is this?
And it's like, can they really like do all of this stuff if they don't have the most basic?
What is this? A coin? What is BitNation? I don't know what it is.
Kind of. Here, let me send you the.
Let's
thing.
Talk about. So yeah, it's just, let's talk about when we get back too.
Yeah, we kind of beat them up. The Bitcoin world kind of beat them up.
Send it over.
Kind of middle of last year. I don't know what they've done yet. I thought they were done, but I guess nope. The site's still there with the typos and kind of half baked. How are you going to do all this too? You know, like they want to do everything, and it's like, why not just focus on?
Did they get a lot of
one
money
thing at a time?
Did they raise money?
Oh yeah, they were trying to do a big crowd sale. Yeah, and
all right.
Let's see how much. But their numbers weren't accurate. What they were showing.
Hey,
I know.
We're back. We're back. We're back. We're back. We're back.
Resigned.
So in our ongoing teaching hospital moment, we want to tell that we did solve the problem with the audio. And did we tell, was that during the break or not that we talked about it? I really can't remember.
We did both. We talked about it when we came on air, and we talked a little more about it on
break. So basically, and I've said this in all the videos and podcasting things that I've done, which is basically, I'll say it again. Don't have your microphone stand clamped to a table that has a computer or anything on it. And especially not on the table that's in front of you that you're touching. But that wasn't the case here. It was, we were hearing the hard drive almost as loud as we were hearing his voice. So, we wanted to segue a little bit into, we talked during the break about the dirty word of governance, which is a word that non-government organizations use, and people think that's a good thing. Like, I've seen people on Facebook pick that from the drop-down menu as what they are. Like, oh, Freedom Fiends, a non-government organization. Like, I would never pick that. That doesn't mean I'm not part of the, it doesn't mean you're not part of the government. It means you're part of a government without directly being part of it. Like the United Nations and every part of the United Nations are NGOs. They're non-government organizations. The Federal Reserve is probably a non-government organization.
So, I think it actually is.
Yeah. So they like to use people who like to nudge politicians and other tyrants who like to nudge people into compliance, like to use the word governance because it doesn't have the dirty word ring yet of government, but it should. And I want to try to give it a dirty name right now. Governance is basically the idea of planning people's lives. And there's this thing called BitNation. Tell us a little bit about this, MK Lords.
All right. So this is basically they're trying to do governance on the blockchain and take all the social services and other services that governments provide. And oh, no, it's fine because a private corporation is offering these services on the blockchain, which and it's as vague as it sounds. I mean, if you go to the website, bitnation.co, it's as vague as all get out. And we actually kind of brought attention to this about middle of last year, actually. People in the Bitcoin community, people on Let's Talk Bitcoin, I interviewed the founder of BitNation, and then the people, three individuals ended up quitting, stepping down right before the crowd sale, and it kind of caused a commotion because they were like, we don't like the direction things are going. We don't think there's a lot of dishonesty. And sure enough, the founder was going around saying that they'd implemented things that weren't implemented, like a multi-signature Bitcoin wallet, which would kind of make it harder to steal funds out of one wallet and a few other things. They didn't have a white paper. They didn't have a plan, like a business plan. And they were trying to do a crowd sale to get, you know, millions of dollars worth of Bitcoin to launch this. And right now, the website's kind of still in the same place it was. And you can't even buy their altcoin. They made an altcoin called XBN. And you can't even, the links don't even work to buy it anymore. And so a lot of people started screaming, this is a scam, this is a scam. And they kind of kept trucking along. I guess some people didn't think it was a scam, but I came down pretty heavy on them. And so did Let's Talk Bitcoin. Stephanie Murphy and Adam Levine and Andreas Antonopoulos did a really good interview where they they pretty much tore it apart. And I guess they might still be going around. Actually, I know she travels quite a bit. Suzanne Tarkowski Tempelhoff is the founder, and she travels a bit talking about it. And I don't know. Like, it doesn't. I get the idea. Like, I get the idea of wanting to provide an alternative to government services and, you know, using blockchain technology to make that better. But they're trying to do everything, you know, like diplomacy, packages, law, insurance, social services, security. Like, how are you going to do that? That's too ambitious, I think, for where we're at in blockchain technology.
So they're not specialized enough?
I think that
in some ways, yes.
I mean, I'm looking at this right now. I think there's kind of two issues with it. One is they weren't anywhere near. It sounded like you said. It sounded like they were trying to. And I'm choosing my words carefully here because I don't want to slander something. But it looks like. Or it looked like to a lot of people like they weren't anywhere near being able to like that they were basically vaporware, that they were not anywhere near being able to offer what they said they were ready to offer. But aside from that, even if they were solid and ready to do it, it looks to me like they're not trying to make this an alternative to governments, but this is like something that they would jump if unless I'm reading this wrong, like they would jump to like if the United Nations says, yes, we want to adopt this and back it and regulate it. Do you get that feeling?
Yeah, I asked the founder that. I was like, are you wanting to interface with government to contract these services? Or are you going to be like the contractors for these services? Or are you doing this as an anti-government thing? And she didn't even give me a clear answer on it. It was kind of very waffling and like, oh, well, of course we kind of want to work with them. But she was also trying to do the, oh, we're the edgy, like, non-government solution. So she said she said both, basically, that they were wanting to provide this kind of anarchic private solution while at the same time interfacing with different governments and, you know, working together with them.
You know,
so,
you used a term there, anti-government. If I were asking that question, I would say non-government or extra government or outside government.
Right, I didn't say. Yeah, I didn't word the question right. I didn't imply.
I want to clarify why I say that. And I've never been anti-government. And a lot of people I know would just say I'm absolutely anti-government, but I'm not. And I want anything I can be able to do to exist outside of governments. Being anti-government says you want to smash governments and destroy them. I don't want to do that. I want to get out of the way and watch the beast collapse on its own. I want to offer and use alternatives to things that are traditionally and encourage things that are traditionally offered by governments. I want to encourage alternatives to the point where the thing starves. And, you know, it's kind of sounds like a pie in the sky. Like, you know, there are people who say, no, we need a violent revolution. And you know what? Those people, those gun strokers, and I own guns, but those gun strokers are all talk. And this is not a call to action. I'm not trying to goad them to violence, but they're all talk. Anybody who says the Second Amendment is, you know, we when this line in the sand, the line in the sand was crossed before any of you were born. It's crossed daily in your neighborhood. So you're all talk. You know, I mean, if you really wanted to defend against tyranny, which is what people say they have guns for, you know, you'd be out arresting police who are kicking in doors of people for smoking pot or, you know, having free speech, and nobody's doing that. So you're all talk, and that goes for Second Amendment, you know, constitutionalists as well as ANCAPs who say that guns are the answer. Guns aren't the answer. Advanced technologies are the answer, and changing the minds and hearts of people wherever you can to the point where people don't cheer when the cops kick in the door for the hippies down the street smoking pot if you're not a hippie. You should be yelling at that and screaming at that and filming that even if you don't smoke pot. I don't smoke pot, and I'm absolutely against cops doing that. So,
yeah,
you know, you can't – here's where I got this idea from. Back in the punk rock days, there's this band called Minor Threat. The singer, Ian MacKay, ran this record label called Discord Records. If you look at Discord, they kind of seem kind of socialist, but they're not. They don't have any like mission statement of politics. They're kind of like, you know, they would go protest in the street of like Ronald Reagan and Ed Meese and stuff, but they didn't have a mission statement. They weren't an ism. You couldn't describe them. They wouldn't answer to it. You know, if you said, what are you, communists, anarchists, capitalists? You know, they were none of those things, but they're also like extreme capitalists. Like they ran this record label, it sold great records, cheaper than anybody else. They said, printed on the cover, like, pay no more than $5.99 for this LP. And like, you know, record stores would put stickers over them. They'd say $6.99. But even so, like, the band was trying to, like, kind of do what – that kind of stuff inspired, like, this license that I wrote. And I know Ian MacKay. He's a friend of mine. I knew him from back in the DC days in the early 80s. I interviewed him for my movie DIY or Die, How to Survive as an Independent Artist. And he talks in there about how he's not, he wasn't anti-major label. Like a lot of people were major label. And he said, I'm not anti-major label. I just want to make a label that people can go to that's better than the major labels. And he said, like, you know, our goal isn't to be the biggest record label in the world. That doesn't have to be the goal. It's kind of like a great neighborhood bakery that lasts for generations. They don't try to open other stores. They just try to make great bread for the people of that neighborhood at a good price that people keep wanting to come back to. That was his business model for Discord Records. And he made it clear, like, he wasn't anti-major label. He just thought they were boring and stupid and lumbering, and most of what they put out wasn't very good. I mean, some of the stuff he liked was on major labels. He loved, you know, The Who. He loved Jimi Hendrix. They inspired him to start playing punk rock. But you don't – I think that being anti-government is not only like a bad idea as far as like getting your door kicked in, but it's just also a bad strategy. I think you should – I think we should – I think I should continue to try to be – you know, look at the government as a lumbering beast that I want to route around because I'm faster and more agile. Not that I want to destroy it.
Worms. It seems like the whole idea is to create a market demand for alternatives so that people don't want the government anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that way we don't have to wait for the revolution.
Yeah.
We can have it every single day.
How do you say worms in Spanish, Hugo?
Lombrices.
Lombrices.
That one's very long.
I like it.
Lombrices.
I like it, though. Yeah. I like it a lot. Yeah. But yeah, and, you know, I think we're all pretty skeptical of a lot of the services that government provides, and there are a lot better private alternatives. But there are a lot of things that, you know, with the Spit Nation thing, that I wouldn't want a private corporation to provide either. You know, like, I'm not sold on some of that stuff. I don't know if I want a private organization to manage my identity, for example, or I'm not sure. I want to see more testing of reputation systems before I go with the first, one that kind of pops up.
One that promises everything.
Put your ID on the blockchain and it's all good. Like, I don't think putting something on the blockchain fixes.
Right. It's like, BitNation reminds me of is one of the cards in Libertarians Against Humanity, which you can go to libertariansagainsthumanity.com and check out. It's Jim Jesus' card expansion deck. It's really funny. One of the cards in that is blank on the blockchain. And I wrote that card. I built that. And it's basically the idea of like, there's so many things coming out now of people saying, well, let's put voting and on the blockchain and delivering dog food on the blockchain. And it's like, I mean, there's a lot of talk, and I would be willing to bet there's something in BitNation's website about voting for public officials on the blockchain. And if there's not, I've certainly heard it a lot. And it's like taking the squarest, worst old idea and trying to put it on a new good idea. It doesn't make it a good idea.
Yeah. That's definitely the feel I got from this, and I'm not sure of their progress so far. I mean, they caught a lot of negativity for a while there, and I thought, good. I mean, I
the
just
market,
assumed it.
The market has spoken.
The market yelled at them.
The market shamed them.
Yeah. All right,
we'll be back for the thrilling confusion, the thrilling confusion of the Freedom Fiends after this trip to the free market. Los Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Fence and then like a dotted fence around it.
Here we go. Freedom Fiends. So, we're going to try to move to positivity here, but we were just getting real cranky during the show, during the break, laughing about all these Bitcoin 2.0 mechanisms that people are planning and how none of them seem like they're really heading toward delivering on their promises at this point. But you had a correction to make. What was it, MK?
I was wrong. In the last segment, I said in the last segment that their wallet service to buy their app coin or their altcoin was not working. I kept getting an error message, but it did eventually work. And you need a counterparty wallet. That's the only wallet that's compatible with the sale. So it looks like if you had that hypothetically, you could buy, their type of cryptocurrency. I want to read this quote really quick. This quote just kind of struck me on their site. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Swedish Pirate Party.
Yeah.
It's like an alternative Swedish political party run by Rick Falkvinge. And he says, BitNation is a very ambitious project, taking on the government of the nation state on its home field, challenging it over its core services and free competition. I have a hard time thinking of anything more disruptive and transformative if this delivers on its potential.
Yeah.
Which I think was a good thing to add on. There.
Yeah, it's
because it is really ambitious, and a lot of people had high hopes.
And that looks like the best blurb they got from anybody is like somebody people have heard of that they associate with crypto, anarcho, liberty of a successful thing, which is the Pirate Bay. Is that a guy from the Pirate Bay or just a guy from the Pirate Party?
No, it's not Pirate Bay.
I know. There's a connection, though. There's a heavy connection between them.
Yeah, there's one. They have this Copy Me initiative.
Yeah, so basically the best they could do is somebody from an organization people have heard of that's associated with freedom. I don't know how free I'd say they are. They're trying to get into into the government to legalize piracy. That'll work. But the best they could do is somebody from them saying, "Yeah, this would be a great idea if it worked."
Yeah, we'll see where it goes. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I think the saving grace of all these Bitcoin 2.0 projects, even if they are not panning out, there's a lot of intelligent people out there that can recognize and learn from the failures. And I think eventually, as this technology matures, we'll start to see a lot better services and
it's
even
part of
new ideas
pains
that we haven't considered.
It's part of the process and the growing pains. And the thing that just reminds me of, and you know, and this was part of growing pains too, was the dot-com thing in the late 90s, and especially in San Francisco, which is where I was living. And I mean, I was like living well off the crumbs of it. I was working at dot-coms, you know, as like a tech writer and doing basic HTML at a few different places, making $30 an hour, showing up when I wanted, leaving when I wanted, and like working with my feet up on the table, wearing shorts and a t-shirt. That was pretty cool. But, and I was like, I was like, you know, the lowest paid guy in the building, except the janitor probably. But, you know, there were a lot of companies that people poured a lot of money into that just went belly up, that just had like bad business plans to begin with. And there was such a gold rush that, like, you know, not only were people like private people buying stock in these things, but like venture capital people who should know better pumping tens of millions of dollars into like companies with business plans basically written on napkins was the joke. But, you know, a little more than that, but not much more.
Well, so people compare Bitcoin to the internet in a lot of ways, and I think it's very similar in that way. Just the way things are now is there's a lot of scams kind of taking place. There's a lot, it's a Wild West kind of territory, a lot of money being thrown around, at, you know, and you're not really sure what's going to work and what isn't, but it's all a necessary process. You know, the good ideas are going to persevere and, you know, come out of it. The bad ideas are going to be left behind, and there needs to be a lot of Bitcoin 2.0 failures before we get some really, you know, and concentrating not so much on Bitcoin 2.0, but Bitcoin itself. I mean, there's still so much. It's an underutilized technology. I don't know why people are jumping ahead into Bitcoin 2.0 stuff when I think the full potential of Bitcoin hasn't really been realized yet.
Well, part of it is that people, part of it is a desire to be the people, the person people remember, like, oh, that person did this and saved us all from the government. But, you know, I think also it's kind of a gold rush thing. I mean, think about all of the...
Yeah, totally.
Think about all the coins other than Bitcoin that added nothing. I mean, Namecoin's the only one that really added anything, and it did not succeed because of inherent problems in the wallet and in the whole system of registration. But, you know, there's what, like 300, 400, 500 other cryptocurrencies that are basically just clones of Bitcoin or Litecoin that do nothing. I mean, Dogecoin does more than any of them, and all it does is has a cute dog on it.
Yeah. And so while I'm not against, you know, competition and stuff, I do think Bitcoin is going to be the most likely cryptocurrency to prevail, and then we'll see other things. I'm very curious to see what happens with MadeSafe, which is a decentralized internet protocol. You know, they're building this new decentralized internet, you know, as a real alternative, and I think that's going to be interesting. We'll see how that goes. I know some people have criticized them too. It's like, oh, what if it's vaporware?
Well, you know, I was
that
actually
opinion's been going around, but they've been working on it for over 10 years.
I was actually
now.
Chatting. I was chatting with
Bitcoin.
The guy. I was chatting with the guy about it on Twitter recently, and I brought up the problem with the fact that they have a bunch of defensive patents. And my problem with it wasn't, oh, you're using the government. It's like, I know enough about intellectual property to know that sometimes defensive patents are a good idea. Like Kevin McKernan sequencing the marijuana genome, patenting it, and releasing it in public domain, so like no government or corporation can hoard it. You know, that's a legitimate and great use, and that tip of the hat to fiend fan and friend of ours Kevin McKernan for that. But my problem with the idea is, like, with a decentralized, it's not really decentralized if there's, like, you know, 10 patents or something in the hands of, you know, a small group of people. It's just not decentralized, man. I don't see how you can call it decentralized.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah, that's a good critique. You know, I know he's put a lot of thought into it and, you know, he's tried to approach things from different angles. And I mean, it's going to be launching soon. So I'm always for, you know, let's test something out and see if it works and decide from there. I'm very skeptical about throwing money at something that has not been tested and that sounds like a really nice promise.
Yeah, and we're out.
There's a lot of that going on.
We're out.
Yeah, I was wondering that, too.
Yeah.
It's
what you put
on it as well. Watching the clock. Why not use an
all-natural, healthy mineral makeup that actually benefits your skin? The board up? Once you
experience it. Hey, guys, Shane.
Hey, Shane.
Were you not getting the...
That was my fault. I had the feed down.
All right. No, all right. No sweat, man.
Thanks, Shane.
We got you out clean anyway.
Yep.
So.
Worms.
All right. Take care, guys.
Take care, man. Bye.
Sweet. Thanks.
All right. So we're still recording. Let's just finish the show up. Yeah, that was my fault. I've never done that. I've made other mistakes, but I've never done that. Basically, I had it down because I keep hearing what sounds like, I don't know if it's echo or not. It sounded like, you know, does somebody have like a anything that's like playing, talking in the background, or like Hugo, is there somebody else talking in your office or something?
No, not at all. I'm the only one here. So
William and Joseph are in the other room.
Okay, that's what it was.
They're not talking very loud. I can very
so you were thinking.
Them.
Yeah,
so I was think that was
the, I was hearing that, and
network?
I yeah, that was on a lot of the show actually. Did you have your door open? For next time?
No.
No? Okay. Well, Fiend
Phone. No, I mean, I had it and they Fiend knew
Phone
that
picks
I
would, it up. I mean, I was.
Wow.
I remember one time.
I mean, I couldn't even hear it when
I.
You
know, no, I remember one time I was talking with, doing a show with that. The show that you did, you were there. It was the 600th episode, the Cat Party one.
Yeah.
Remember we heard Ian like laugh in the next room?
Yeah.
Like it was like that. I mean, I it wasn't that,
I even
it wasn't
had
that
stuff
loud.
On the walls, you know, to kind of cover the yeah. sound and stuff. So,
I guess next time it would be like put a towel under the door or something. But
right, I have a towel over.
Yeah, because there's no sound cancellation by design in Fiend Phone. So, I was hearing that, and I thought it was like crosstalk from the GCN feed. So I turned the GCN feed all the way down, and then I was still hearing it. So I knew it was coming from one of you. But I forgot to turn it back up. So that's what happened.
Okay. So, did it catch any of? Was it just your comments where the was where it ended?
What? I don't understand the question.
Yes.
Okay.
Well,
he got it.
Like he answered for me, but I still don't know what you asked.
Yeah. So did it cut off before I even responded? Was that what you were saying when you were like, "And we're done," or was did it end when you said that?
When I said "and we're done," we'd been out for about a minute.
Okay, that's what I kind of thought that. Right.
But he said it went out clean. I don't know what that means. I'm assuming that meant that like. You know, we were kind of wrapping something up and he faded us out and brought the music up probably.
Yeah, he probably caught you right at a pause.
Yeah, I mean, you could go listen to the GCN feed archive. It'll be up in 15 minutes if you're curious.
All right.
Yeah. That's a really
Michael, I was wondering. Well.
Yes, Hugo?
Michael, I was wondering, do you, I'm going to try starting working with my show like a radio show. So I was wondering, you know, to get used to the pauses and the segments, and I was wondering, do you have a show clock for the show for your show? I remember there was a diagram, a circular diagram that you